Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Now, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurdy. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. We strip away all the politically correct niceties surrounding the news. Bring you the real story. So glad to have you aboard. The real story this week, well, probably the most compelling story of the week, for me anyway, came out of the pulpit at Denver Bible Church this morning. The sermon was all about Pluto. Pluto, I said. Science. And the collapse of Big Bang cosmology. We had some visitors at the church who were, well, you could see it in their eyes as they sat in the pews there that they had never heard a sermon like this before, ever. Never, not even once at any church. And they liked it. They were digging it. It was a fun time. So what do you think is going to happen when Big Bang cosmology finally collapses? As it really has, if anyone wants to be honest with themselves. But one thing atheists are famous for is not being honest with themselves or anyone else. So they'll hang on to it for a while, but eventually they're going to go somewhere else because it's just not going to work. Pastor Bob did a fantastic job of pointing out that atheists, Big Bangers, Old Earthers, evolutionists, Neo-Darwinists, none of them have any logical explanation for origins. And he pointed out that, yes, indeed, just as I have suspected for quite some time, that eventually they will be going straight to the aliens. That's right, it was the aliens. You know what? You know what will be interesting? 1,000 years from now, after the Big Bang has gone the way of geocentrism, I wonder if the average atheist 1,000 years from now will blame the Catholic Church for the Big Bang cosmology. In a similar fashion, they blame Christendom for geocentrism, mistakenly, by the way. But they do, and they, even with no evidence, they blame us for all the silly science that's ever gone on before. And I wonder if 1,000 years it will be the same way for the Big Bang and evolution, because I think the Pope's a Big Banger and an evolutionist. So all those popes will get all the blame. Well, we'll just see about that. Yes, I plan to be alive 1,000 years from now. Not on this mortal plane, but I will be watching. And I may even comment if I can find anyone to listen to me. All right, what else do we have? Let's see. Well, we could just jump right into the news. I can't get over this picture that's been up at the top or at the center of the Drudge Report for a couple of days now. The tweet from the Ayatollah Khamenei. He's the fellow who just secured the nuclear deal with Barry and Kerry and the four horsewomen of the apocalypse. Uh-huh. So what does he do to say thank you? He posts a picture of Barry with a pistol to his head. That the President of the United States holding a pistol to his own head. And we can tell it's Barry because he has the telltale American flag lapel pin and he's got those big floppy Barry Ho ears.
Are you sure it's not a Hannity?
Well, it could be Sean Hannity.
He's a great American.
Yeah, he is a great American. Got to give him that. Now, this reminds me of the feminists and the homosexualists. And Barry should learn this, as should all members of Western civilization, especially in our political leadership. The more you give these people, the more they get what they want, the angrier they get. Whether they're Iranian mad mullahs or feminists or homosexualists, the more they get what they want, the angrier they get. And I want to remind you people that Iran's centrifuges kept spinning throughout these 2 years of negotiations with Ho and the girls, and they will continue to spin while Congress takes their vacation. here in August. And those centrifuges, which are enriching uranium toward an eventual nuclear bomb, they will keep spinning all through the congressional 60-day review. And I'm not sure how long they have to spin before the Iranians are able to launch a nuclear weapon against Tel Aviv, but you'll be the first to know. Okay, we'll all be the first to know. Very disturbing. Very disturbing that the Ayatollah Khamenei isn't happy with us. I thought he'd be relatively cheerful this week, having utterly devastated America's political leadership, the bunch of neophyte children, ignorant, suicidal, heathen children who have somehow taken over the government and made a deal with the devil. I mean, literally a deal with the devil. Because as you know, I think Islam is a satanic religion. I think it's the perfect satanic religion because it keeps people bound in legalism for their whole life, and then they go straight to hell with jet rockets. And the devil likes nothing more than that. All right. So that's international politics. Let's move. Well, here we've got some more international politics from the politics file, as a matter of fact. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that the Obama administration is preparing to release Israeli spy Jonathan Pollard. Do you folks remember Jonathan Pollard? Yeah, he's 60 years old now, but the journal reports that when, he was a civilian analyst with the U.S. Navy when he was arrested back in 1985 for passing secret documents to the State of Israel. So he stole secrets from America and passed them to another government. Albeit a friendly government, he still was a spy. Now, Israel, according to the journal, Israel has for years sought Jonathan Pollard's early release because Pollard, you see, was sentenced to life in prison when he should have been executed. Because if you steal secrets from the American government and pass them to any other government, you should be executed upon due conviction. But he wasn't. And so it has been something of a thorn in the side of both the American and Israeli administrations ever since the 80s. So now it's odd, on the heels of the Iranian nuclear deal, guaranteeing that Iran will be a nuclear power in about a decade, that suddenly the United States government has a change of heart and decides to release Jonathan Pollard. To me, this has Samantha Power's fingerprints all over it. Her or one of the other four horsewomen. Perhaps Valerie Jarrett. Perhaps one of the others. So, I mean, they're throwing Israel a bone. I mean, they've given their greatest enemy the pathway to a nuclear weapon, and now they're going to throw him a bone and give him Jonathan Pollard. You know, Mike Huckabee is getting criticized in some quarters for saying that the Ho administration has basically marched the Jews to the doors of the ovens. And, well, now I guess they've decided to let Pollard join them there at the gates of the ovens. The Jews are supposed to feel good about that. Yeah. All right, well, I think Pollard should have been executed, and the fact that he wasn't executed, I think he should be released. He certainly shouldn't be locked up like an animal for the rest of his life. While Barry and his four horsewomen of the apocalypse are busy playing politics, the Islamic State continues. The Express newspaper over in the United Kingdom is reporting that they've picked up chatter that the terrorists and ISIS terrorists want to use unmanned drones to drop explosives on large crowds of people. Yeah. Defense chiefs warn that the Islamist fanatic ISIS killers could launch a multi-drone attack carrying several bombs, even using airborne cameras to film the carnage and then post it up on YouTube so that they can recruit more disillusioned European and American millennials. Yeah, this is according to senior MI5 officials. That's British Intelligence Agency. They say ISIS is obsessed with recreating the horror of 9/11. And believes that a multi-drone attack on large crowds in multiple locations could be possible. They try to do it in a synchronized attack. I can't believe they haven't done it already. It proves how inept they are. By the way, we're reminded that last year on eBay alone, 127,000 drones were bought and sold. 127,000. So how is it that the fanatics haven't gotten a hold of a drone already and figured out how to kill people with it? Well, they're just inept, and we're fortunate that they're inept because we're almost as inept as they are as far as wiping out their ideology. So there we have it. ISIS continues to rampage. The four horsewomen in Barrie, they continue to play politics. And here we are. Here we are in America being asked, is Donald Trump the next Ronald Reagan? That's the... Is Trump the next Reagan? Well, I hate to go into presidential politics because, you know, it's fairly ridiculous at this point. But, you know, at least Trump has some good one-liners. I'll give him that. I wouldn't ask if he's the next Ronald Reagan. But the fact that that question is being asked, I think, is an accurate barometer of the downward trajectory of conservatism in America. Yeah. Because Reagan was a relatively liberal politician who, well, he appeared conservative when put up against the leftist psychopaths in the Democrat Party. And now Trump, I don't even think he was a Republican until a few years ago. Now he looks conservative. And he's a flaming liberal. Donald Trump, are you kidding me? But he does have some good one-liners. You know what else is an accurate barometer of the downward trajectory of conservatism in America? Is the rest of the 19 kids and counting in the Republican field. They're all an accurate barometer of the downward trajectory of Western civilization in general, but especially conservatism in America. But let's talk about... Oh, there was some controversy. By the way, those of you who tuned into the special midweek edition of the Weekly Worldview earlier this week, we did a Wednesday night show. I just want to apologize to you all, and please understand that they just all can't be great shows, okay? Sometimes you get off the plane, you're jet lagged, but you feel an obligation to the audience, and you come in and you do a show, and then you listen to it afterward, and you're like, wow, that was pretty weak. I thought it was weak, that's all. So I apologize to all of you, and we hope to make it up to you this time. No, the bumpers were fantastic. Don't get me wrong. There was nothing wrong with the bumpers. It was the material in between that I found to be less than up to par. Let's just put it that way. But like I say, they can't all be great shows, just like we can't all be heroes, just like everybody who gets into the military is not a hero. Just like John McCain is not a hero.
All right.
That was the controversy was over whether or not John McCain was a hero. Well, let's talk about some heroes. Some of the Marines down in Chattanooga tried to distract the shooter, the Islamist fanatic, Mohammedan. They were helping people scale a fence to get the people to safety and apparently returned fire at the attacker. How did they return fire, you ask? Military personnel are not allowed to carry loaded weapons on the job. Well, these are Marines, keep in mind. And while Marines are famous for keeping the spirit of the law, sometimes they violate the letter of the law. Apparently, some of the four Marines and one sailor who were killed sacrificed themselves during the assault, diverting the gunman from a larger group of potential victims. Now, Mr. McCain, this is a hero. When you divert gunfire away from other people, direct it toward yourself, that is a hero. So some of these five in Chattanooga qualify as genuine heroes. This is from the New York Times, by the way. They're also reporting that at least one service member shot at the attacker. Yes, a special agent in charge of the Chattanooga FBI office says two guns belonging to service members were recovered from the scene, and at least one of those weapons had been discharged. And, you know, this proves the old axiom that if you're going to carry a gun, you have to actually carry it. It has to actually be on your person or within arm's length in order to avert disaster. But my guess is some of these Marines, either kept guns in the office or in their car. And, they did what they could. But for all you kiddos out there, if you're going to carry a gun, you have to actually carry it and have it on your person. So, let's see. Do we have anything else from the New York Times? Oh, according to the New York Times, investigators are trying to determine if the shooter, Mohammed, had come into contact with extremists who might have radicalized him. The New York Times says that they're investigating. Right now, the special agent in charge of the FBI office there in Knoxville, he's saying, quote, at this point, we're treating him as a homegrown violent extremist. A homegrown violent extremist. That's a fairly generic term that this FBI. Can you imagine? The only way to move up in the FBI is to toe the line when it comes to the boss who's in charge of the FBI. Well, that leads right to the White House. So I can just imagine that senior leadership within the FBI, the CIA, the military itself, has all been gutted by Barry Obama, and it's just a bunch of politically correct saps who will say anything they're told to say in order to keep their job and their pension. That's what we're left with, and that's the only reason that an FBI agent worth his salt would call Mohammed, the Chattanooga killer, a homegrown violent extremist. Now, what are the odds? Now, who is that? Who's singing that song there? I'm not familiar. It's someone from the 80s, right? Is it Bonnie Tyler? I wonder if Bonnie Tyler, at the height of her popularity, when all the producers were calling her a musical genius, and she insisted that she have her artistic freedom, I wonder if she ever imagined that her music, the pinnacle of her music, would become the soundtrack for a disposable mop on a mindless sitcom on a cable network with a smaller audience than she drew at the Ector County Coliseum in 1985. Do you think she ever thought that? I mean, do you remember when musicians demanded that they be treated as artists? And what they did has turned out to be nothing more than commercial jingle stuff. Yeah. Right? I think I saw a dust thing sticking on a mop when I heard that song. Is it that song or is it another Bonnie Tyler song? Anyway, Bonnie, we still love you and respect your artistic integrity, despite the fact that you're now a Swiffer commercial.
No, it's not.
I don't know. That's what I thought of. And the Swiffer, by the way, is a fine product. So I think they should be, hey, they're taking the money, whatever. All right. Anyway. Yeah, that's hilarious. Is it? Yeah, Judas Priest is now a bug killer commercial. Do you think any of them thought that their musical genius would be boiled down to that within 20 years of releasing the album? Well, there you go. So anyway, if you think you're some kind of musical genius, well, crank out some good music and save your pennies because it's a short ride, all right? So there you go. But we appreciate Bonnie's efforts. Let's see here. Should we continue? Oh, on the heels of the Chattanooga murders, I don't know what I could call them murders. I think that was a war zone. I think that was a military attack. Yeah. Someone asked at church this morning, how do you stop a lone wolf killer? And he said, well, with a lone gun. And if you're a good shot, a lone bullet. That's all it takes. So that's a reasonable strategy. But the Ho administration and the Four Horsewomen have changed the requirements to become a United States citizen. I pulled this story down off of townhall.com, a relatively repugnant website that just spews out Republican talking points and is generally not readable. I don't recommend anyone read townhall.com. It just happens to be where I got this story, but please don't think that I'm promoting them in any way. Because they're generally, it's like trying to watch Judge Jeanine on Fox News. What's the deal with that woman's opening monologue? She has to read it and bop her head around. What's up with that? And she's yelling half the time. And it's obvious she's reading because her crossed eyes are kind of moving, consistently moving, you know, from right to left there. Anyway, it's a creepy thing to watch. Judge Janine, and she dresses like a prostitute. And she has enough Botox and fillers in her face to poison, you know, the average American family. All right. I hate Fox News almost as much as I hate townhall.com, but I'm going to read this story because, well, that's where I got it. The United States Citizenship and Immigration Service has clarified requirements for folks becoming naturalized citizens. Effective July 21st, 2015, new guidance has been issued that clarifies the eligibility requirements. Reciting the oath, you know, the oath that the naturalized citizen takes, well, it's part of the naturalization process, and candidates for citizenship normally declare that they will, quote, bear arms on behalf of the United States and perform non-combatant service in the armed forces of the United States when required by law. So in a time of war, you become a naturalized citizen. Part of it has always been to take an oath that if the American military calls upon you in time of war, that you will either fight or you will work to support the military. Well, that's been taken out. That's no longer going to be part of it. The new guidance says that, you don't have to say that. You don't have to say that. The rule change allows naturalized citizens to refuse service altogether. They may be eligible for modifications based on religious training. They don't have to belong to a specific church or have had any religious training in order to qualify. They can just basically say, we don't want to fight. Or we want to join Barry and the Four Horsewomen and fight on the other side. I think they could just say that. This comes just a few days after Mohammed Yusuf Abdulaziz. I wonder if any Muslims had gotten to this guy. You think? Maybe. Well, his name was Mohammed. This comes right after he killed the four Marines and a sailor there in Chattanooga. Mohammed Yusuf Abdulaziz was a naturalized citizen. And he took the oath. But he applied it to fighting for Barry and the girls on the other side against the American military. And so now you'll just be able to do that without having to lie about it. So there we have that. Now in Europe, dark clouds are rolling, ladies and gentlemen, after this whole Greek situation, which on its face, it seems as though that the ruling elite have avoided financial shock waves that could go out across the economies of the world as the world's 111th largest economy grinds to a halt there in Greece. But they may have just kicked the can down the road, and it'd just be uglier next time. Got a story from the Telegraph in London. A pre-revolutionary fervor is sweeping Europe, similar to 1968. Yeah, these are the words of the European Council President Donald Tusk. What is the European Council, and why do we need that? Don't we have the European Union? Don't we have the fat bureaucrats in Brussels running the EU? Why do we have a European Council? You know why? Because bureaucrats reproduce by creating agency after agency that does redundant and duplicative work so that they can hire their cousins, their shiftless nephews, and as many of their mistresses as possible. Yes, there's still mistresses in most, old-fashioned mistresses they still have over there. Anyway, The European Council president was speaking about 48 hours after Greece's bailout. He says, Regarding Europe, he says, when impatience becomes not an individual but a social experience of feeling, this is the introduction for revolutions. He says, I'm afraid of this ideological contagion. And he's basically talking about leftist socialism rolling across Europe as more and more Europeans decide that they do not want to pay the bills. They would just, please, could we just steal it from our unborn great-grandchildren? Let me have my wine and my 6 weeks vacation. Please, I want to be off by 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And if we need to make up the difference, my non-existent children will hopefully have some non-existent grandchildren, and they'll hopefully have some great-grandchildren. Or hopefully somebody will, because that's where we choose to get the money instead of paying it ourselves. Let's see here. Alexis Tsipras, he's the Greek prime minister. He was forced, according to the Telegraph, he was forced to submit to a deal that punished the government's insolence and destroy the fantasy that a new Eurozone could be forged for the economics of the southern Mediterranean. See, it's all the southern Mediterranean countries that have just rolled up the debt like you wouldn't believe. And they all think that they'll never have to pay. And so they say that this illusion has been broken by the Greek deal, but I don't think that's true. Well, I don't think that's true at all. I think that there's elections coming up. Here the Telegraph reports general elections are coming up in Portugal, Spain, and Ireland, and probably going to bring a bunch of psychopathic leftist thieves into office who promise the lazy, shiftless members of the European Union that they can go on being lazy and shiftless forever and never have to pay their bills. And whoever tries to slap them down, eventually it's going to lead to probably a continent-wide conflict. Just sad to see it happening. Almost as sad as the queering of America, as we jump into the queering of America file. Oh, this isn't the queering of America file this week. This is the queering of Africa file. Yes, because why is Africa getting queered? That's Q-U-E-E-R-E-D, queered. Africa's getting queered because Barry's there. Barack Obama, the first homosexual president, is in Africa. The AP is reporting that Barack Obama, the president of the United States, nudged African nations on Saturday to treat gays and lesbians equally under the law. The Kenyans responded by calling the matter a non-issue. Oh, no, this is not an issue here in Kenya. And to which Barry and the four dykes, the four horsewomen, they said, oh, no, it's an issue, buddy. It's the only issue. It's our main issue. The most important thing to Barack Obama and his minions in office is to homosexualize every civilization possible as much as possible. Yeah, Barry, even while he was giving his speech there in Kenya, he compared the treatment of homosexuals in Africa to slavery and segregation in the United States. Once again, lumping in all of our black and brown brothers and sisters, lumping them in with a bunch of mentally ill sex perverts. It's just unbelievable. Yeah. He says that if the Africans keep treating the queers badly, he says, freedoms begin to erode and bad things happen. Bad things happen, Barry. That sounds like a threat. Get in line or else, says Barry and the four horsewomen to the Africans. We'll cut off your AIDS money. Now, how about that? Get in line. So anyway, the president there, a fella named Uhuru Kenyatta, says gay rights is not really an issue in the foremost minds of Kenyans. And that bothers Barry because he wants everyone thinking about homosexual sex all the time. That's what he wants us to think about. He distracts us with that. Kenyan politicians and religious leaders had warned Obama to keep his mouth shut about the queers, but he didn't. In fact, it was one of the first things he let out of his yap there after landing in Kenya. The AP reports that Barack Obama in Kenya is widely considered a local son. Yeah, or daughter, Or, you know, whatever he, what does he think he is? Because whatever that is, we'll go with that. Actually, in Africa, he's a local son. And if he goes and does the transgendered thing, they'll consider him a local son. Because they're not in line yet. Let's see, much of Obama's discussion with Kenyatta centered on Al-Shabaab, the terror network linked to Al-Qaeda. Wow! Barack Obama was talking about Al-Shabaab with the president there in Kenya, probably some of his intelligence people there in Kenya, the Kenyan Intelligence Service. Man, I hope they didn't give Barry's team anything classified that they might that they might pass on to Al-Shabaab. We're back. Yes, thank you for a bumper from back when rock and roll was alive, before it suffered its untimely death. Yes, sometime in the early 90s. We all know who was responsible for George killing Soros. Rock and roll. Yeah, George Soros. No. I think that it can be the death of rock and roll.
Nirvana.
Could be. No, no. I don't think it was Nirvana, although Nirvana put it on life support. I think the death of rock and roll can be directly traced to Queensryche. Yeah. Queensryche killed rock and roll dead as a doornail. By the time their second album had come out, it was all over. And then you had all that music from the 90s, music to take heroin and shoot your teacher to. And it was all dead after that. Stone Temple Pilots. And who were the guys with the squawk box singing all that depressing music about the rooster and all that? Well, the Smashing Pumpkins, no doubt. They're also responsible in some degree. But anyway, I can't think of that band. But it was very depressing. Wow. Anyway, who can take that? So anyway, my extremely attractive audio engineer was lamenting the fact that I was talking about homos again. She gets so sick of me talking about homos, and she's trying to find bumper music from her catalog, which is all extremely heterosexual music. I mean, it's the 80s, back when rock was alive, before the depressed heroin addicts from Seattle killed it and gave it over to the queers.
They look like Bruce Jenner.
Who looks like Bruce Jenner?
All the 80s.
Well, yeah, you should see the lead singer from Queensryche. He looks just like Bruce Jenner now.
Really?
I saw a picture of the guy. So now I've lost my place. Anyway, she says she wants me to just shut up about the homos, and I will do that. Let's move. Let's move to the theater shooting. It's happened again. Another shooting in a theater. This happened in where did this shooting happen? My goodness. Let's see here. Yeah. I can't. Anyway, there's been another theater shooting. And, well, now nobody knows what's going to happen. First of all, folks, the shooting happened at a movie theater that was playing a movie called Trainwreck, which I went and looked at this. And it's basically a movie about serial fornication that ends well. Okay? And that... Well, I went to see what the movie was.
Oh.
And it's about some single woman who drinks a lot and just a serial fornicator, but it's an upbeat comedy that ends well. And that, in and of itself, should be some kind of crime. To make a movie about heavy drinking and serial fornication that ends well, to me, that is a crime. But let's leave that aside, because there has been another shooting, and the movie theater companies, according to this article I pulled down from the Reuters wire, the movie theater companies are very concerned that they may have to put in metal detectors at the movie theaters. And according to the president of Global Security Services, this is a company that's been providing armed security personnel to some of the biggest movie theater chains for the past 15 years. The president of the Global Security Services says, quote, "My gut tells me that people would say, if they had to go through a metal detector, people would say, why am I coming here? It must be dangerous. I don't want to bring my children to this theater, so I'll go somewhere else." Which they could have said when they saw that there was a movie about serial fornication that ends well. They could have said, "I don't want to bring my children to this theater because the pornography that they're putting out could be dangerous to my kids." But no, it won't get through their thick skulls until that it is dangerous, till they have to go through a metal detector to go in and watch the pornographic filth being churned out in modern movie theaters. I'm actually amazed that there hasn't been more of this. I'm amazed that the Al-Qaeda or Al-Shabaab or ISIS, I'm surprised that they haven't attacked more theaters, frankly. And I think it's just a testimony to how inept they are. Yeah, no, I don't want to give them any ideas. You didn't hear that from me. You know, the theater owners shouldn't be responsible for installing metal detectors. They shouldn't have to incur that expense. Now, I'm no friend of the theater owners, okay? Obviously, you can tell that. But it's unjust that they should have to think about putting in metal detectors when, in fact, what they should do is band together and petition the government to reinstate a swift and painful death penalty so that the weak-minded, mentally deficient people will not think that mass murder is one of the viable options that they might consider when they want to vent their frustration or, you know, solve their perceived problems. Mass murder, folks, mass murder and suicide have become, to many weak-minded, mentally deficient people, it's just one of a number of mechanisms that they may use to vent their anger or to solve whatever problems they think they have in their lives. And that's because the government has failed to put the fear of God into these people so that they would never even consider shooting people at a movie theater. Okay, and one last thing, because this annoys me, folks. Words have meaning, but a lot less than they used to. Listen to how the Reuters reporter talks about this shooting that happened, by the way, in Lafayette, Louisiana, at the movie theater. They say there was a shooting in which two people were killed when a man opened fire. It's just a little too generic. The words they use don't really imply any responsibility to anyone. The shooter is not credited with killing people. And they could do that without saying that we know this guy did. These people were obviously shot by another person, for crying out loud. They weren't hit because someone opened fire. They were shot and they were killed. There wasn't a shooting in which they were killed. They were shot and killed. Anyway, this just annoys me. This goes back to a conversation I had with a good friend about the word may, that one of the Supreme Court justices used in one of his opinions regarding homosexual marriage. One of the sex pervert Supreme Court judge basically said that Christians, religious organizations, people with deeply held religious convictions may continue to do this or that, and they won't have to basically marry the queers off in the church. And I pointed out, I said, he used the word may. That's as if they could change later. And my friend said, no, it's just a simple grammatical phrase. Anyway, I was offended by it, and I just want to note that when the founders wrote the Constitution, they didn't say that the right of the people to keep and bear arms may not be infringed. They said it shall not be infringed. And that helped for it not to be infringed, at least for a little while. Of course, it's infringed left and right anymore. You can barely tell. We have the right to keep and bear arms. And by the way, I'm shocked, frankly. This tells you where American manhood is. I'm shocked that there wasn't at least one person in that theater with a gun. I can't believe that anyone would go watch a movie without a gun. I wouldn't do it. Now, I wouldn't go watch a movie. But if I was going to go watch a movie, I would bring a gun, for crying out loud, based on just common sense, for crying out loud. But anyway, there we are. So the government should reinstate the death penalty so the theater owners don't have to install metal detectors. And David Geffen, Jeffrey Katzenberg, Quentin Tarantino, they should all be arrested. About 100 other producers should be arrested for the pornographic, violent garbage that they churn out in these theaters. But that's a separate issue. All right. Now let's go to reason number 917 to keep or get your children out of the government schools. Nicole DeFault of Caldwell, New Jersey, has pled not guilty to aggravated sexual assault on a child and child endangerment. She was a language arts teacher. Language arts. Well, see, we used to call that English back when there were right and wrong answers. But now it's language arts. And there are no right or wrong answers. And she was teaching that, if you can call it teaching. And she was also having sex with half a dozen 14 and 15-year-old boys in the school, in her car, everywhere. Now, her attorney, what's that? Yeah, yuck, right? Anyway, that this is the modern public school system. That's why it's reason number 917. The woman's lawyer, she says, actually, she suffers from frontal lobe syndrome. This is a syndrome. It's a condition, actually, that leaves her, Your Honor, it leaves her unable to control her impulses. She's unable, you see, Your Honor, to control. And so, you know, I don't know. I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist. I'm not a medical doctor. She may very well have. She had some kind of brain surgery. She has a shunt installed in her brain, whatever that means. And she may have some mental deficiency that causes her to be whatever. Anyway, she shouldn't be teaching school. She shouldn't be around kids. And your kids should not be in the public schools. One of many reasons is that Nicole DeFault could be your son's teacher. Reason number 917. These are in no particular order, by the way. We will go now to reason number 927. To get or keep your children out of the government schools. And this comes to us, believe it or not, from CBN. Yes, the Christian Broadcasting Network, Christian in quotation marks, because CBN, in my opinion, is the most embarrassing representation of anything Christian ever on television, on the internet, anywhere. It's the worst. A bunch of lying thieves, in my opinion, run a network that bilks old ladies out of their money and lies to people about prophecy and just makes the name of Jesus Christ, it's an embarrassment to the name of Jesus Christ and the truth of his gospel. Everything CBN does. A bunch of lying thieves, in my opinion. But they issued a warning on their Facebook page about a school in Virginia where eighth graders will soon be receiving lessons on, well, I can't say that. Let's just say things sexual that are so, I can't talk about them, okay? I can't say those words. Fourth graders are going to receive instruction about incest, homosexual, and bisexual transgender identity. Starting in kindergarten, students will be taught about same-sex, gay marriage. And Andrea Lafferty, president of the Traditional Values Coalition, she says parents will not be able to opt out. They won't be able to opt out. That's Andrea Lafferty, president of the Traditional Values Coalition. Traditional Values Coalition, Andrea? What are you going to call your group 100 years from now when homosexual marriage and transgenderism is the tradition? Are you just going to be there? Is that going to be what you promote, traditional values of queers and transgendered freaks of nature? Is that Because, I mean, what is traditional? It's what's been happening for a while. That's all. I have a feeling the Traditional Values Coalition and Andrea Lafferty are part of the burgeoning pro-family industry, taking the lead from the pro-life industry who bamboozled pro-lifers for 40 years and stole our money. Now the pro-family industry has arisen to defend marriage, and within half a decade they lost that one. But now they'll raise money for the next 40 years, and the one thing they will not mention is God. What they're going to mention is tradition. But now CBN does mention God when they shouldn't. Here's what they say. Please join us at CBN in praying for the public school system. Let's pray for the public school. How do you pray for people who hate God, have kicked God out of their classrooms, teach the children that there is no God, that they're animals who evolved from nothing and who are going toward nothingness? How do you pray? How am I supposed to pray for them? I'll tell you what I'll pray for. I'll pray that, number one, that you idiots at CBN somehow go broke and get off the air and stop embarrassing me. Number two, I'll pray that decent parents will flee the public schools and get their children out. And I'll also pray that groups like the Traditional Values Coalition hopefully quickly go the way of the pro-life industry and have an ever smaller and shrinking portion of the pie when it comes to motivating genuine Christian decent people towards social action. That's why everybody wants a piece of the action. Everybody needs a main attraction. Got what everybody needs. Satisfaction guarantees. Everybody wants a piece of the Thank you, boys. All right. Yes. Another one from back when rock and roll was alive. Yes. Before it suffered its untimely death. Okay, boys. All right. Uh-huh. Oh, here we go. She won't stop. All right. Put those guitars away. We've got to get back to the show. Yes, rock and roll's untimely death sometime in the early 90s. And now we all know. Anyone who was paying attention anyways, we all know who was responsible for the death of rock and roll. And, I mean, we should have seen it coming, right? I mean, some of us even bought the record. We knew it was happening.
I didn't.
No, you didn't. I don't think I ever bought. Anyway, we all know that the death of rock and roll can be traced directly to Queensryche. Yes, Queensryche, yes. That was the bellwether that we should have all seen coming. Because after that, it was all depressed people from Seattle taking heroin and making music to shoot your teacher by. It was just over. I mean, you had Stone Temple Pilots, although I think they were from San Diego.
Nirvana,
yeah. Music to shoot yourself by. The Smashing Pumpkins, just depressing. And then the guys with the, I can't remember, they sang about the rooster and Alice in Chains, right? That was when that was the funeral of rock and roll. Yeah, it was a closed casket. Yeah, he's dead. The lead singer's dead. I think he overdosed on heroin, appropriately.
No.
Yeah, no, shocking. Anyway, that was the closed casket service they had, was the Alice in Chains when they came out. Anyway, it was all over in very short order. And
for some reason, you like Chris Cornell.
He's
a good singer.
Chris Cornell survived. See, he survived the death of rock and roll.
A good singer.
Yeah, he's like the guy who survived that plane crash. He staggered on for a little while. He's going straight to hell with jet rockets, though. All right. Now, the younger people who listen to the show, the millennials, there's like, who? What's rock and roll? What are they talking about?
That's right.
Yeah. Who's Queen's right? That might be the one thing that you can say about the millennials that in their favor is that they do not know who Queensryche is. That's one thing they got going for them. All right. Now, speaking of you millennials, if there are any of you listening, maybe there are, I've got a story from the Times of India that's very disturbing, something that we've been talking about for a decade or so on the show. According to a charitable organization called Rescue, which is a Bangalore, India-based charity that has been campaigning for a ban on pornography sites, they conducted a survey among 400 students from 10 city colleges across India, and they said there was a growing number of youth watching violent pornography. They report that boys who start watching pornography from their teenage years get bored very quickly and start watching more child pornography and also videos with violent content. And they say that in their survey, 70% of the boys who answered said that they began watching pornography at about the age of 10 years old. And I think that's about right. Now, well, at least in my life, the first time I encountered pornography was on the way walking from my house to my elementary school. And I must have been in third or fourth grade. What's that, 8, 9, 10 years old? That's the first time I encountered it. Because someone hid it underneath a pile of rubbish. They put it there, I think, so that kids would find it. Because half the kids in my neighborhood walked to school along this path. And someone put it there. I don't know who. But there it was. I was 8, 9, 10 years old. And the survey says the boys answered that at about the age of 10 was when they started consuming pornography. Now, proponents of pornography, namely college students, college counselors, and social activists, are saying that this report is probably exaggerating. It's an exaggeration. The numbers just seem too startling high and seemingly improbable, according to college students, counselors, and activists, when they heard that 70% of boys said they started watching porn at the age of 10. And then these college students, counselors, and social activists asked where they could meet these boys. No, I made that up. It's because they're a bunch of perverts. They're on the side of pornography. A number of college students interviewed trashed the findings. They said, it just can't be. 80% of boys are watching porn. That was another part of the report. 86% of boys say they consume it regularly. And these college students say, no, that seems far-fetched. At which point you could ask the student, well, okay, how many kids in your class watch pornography? They would have said, everybody. How many of the teachers? Well, all of them. How many of the administrators? All of them. How many of the legislatures, the people in the government, and the justices, and the police? And they would have said, well, everybody. But 86% seems a little far-fetched. Student counselors admit that porn addiction is becoming a problem, but they say that the numbers given by this survey are just an exaggeration. Activists say banning and blaming pornography for sexual abuse would be hypocritical because they say kids are already exposed to sex and violence on mainstream TV, so it'd be hypocritical to blame pornography for all the ills in society. So they're basically admitting that television, mainstream television, is pornography anymore. I mean, you got commercials for underarm deodorant and cheeseburgers that are thinly veiled pornography every night on American television, and I'm sure in India as well. So let me just ask you, American parents, American millennials, do you think that there's more access to online pornography in America or in India? Where do you think the 10-year-olds have an easier time stumbling across pornography for the first time, India or America? So just do the math in your own head and think about that, because I think that this report is relatively accurate. I mean, just based on my personal experience and the experience of, well, let's see, everyone I know. Okay, there you go. All right. Now, last week or in our midweek special edition, did I already apologize for the midweek special edition? Yeah, I think I did. Folks, you can't always be on top of your game, okay? Sometimes you fall short. Anyway, let's see. I implied that I had reported on it or I had heard reports about Planned Parenthood peddling body parts back in 1999. Well, I did a little bit of research and I found an ABC News 2020 program dated March of 2000. In which Chris Wallace produced evidence of a thriving industry in which fetuses women donate to help medical research are being marketed for hundreds and even thousands of dollars by who else but Planned Parenthood. So here it is, March of 2000. So not 1999, but the spring of 2000. I thought I had heard this story before. The Planned Parenthood, the president, that she condemned the whole thing, said it's terrible. If it's going on, we're going to stop it. Where there's any wrongdoing, it'll be prosecuted, said the president of Planned Parenthood in an eerily reminiscent fashion of what we heard just over this past week. And then in February of 2000, when Congress was made aware, Congress vowed to investigate this travesty and outrage. And Republican congressmen began sending out fundraising letters. National Right to Life Committee blitzed with fundraising letters, and tens of thousands, if not millions of dollars, were raised from decent-minded Christian people who wanted to see the end of such a horrific thing. The millions were raised, the tens of thousands, it was all spent, and what changed? Yeah, that's right. Nothing changed. Nothing changed. And so this too shall pass. After Life News and the National Right to Life Committee and the other abortion regulators who are outraged. I mean, we've only given permission for these children to be killed. We haven't given anyone permission to dissect their bodies and sell their parts. Congressmen, we didn't say they could sell their parts. Well, they're only supposed to be killing these kids, for crying out loud. How did this get out of hand? How could this be happening? They said as they raised the money, spent it, and nothing. And the fact is, ladies and gentlemen, when the leadership of the so-called pro-life movement abandoned the right to life, when they abandoned the God-given right to life, the name of God, when they took the name of God out of their political campaigns, they ensured that just this type of barbarism would take place and that it would get this bad. Because once you take away the right to life or make it negotiable in certain circumstances, there's no bottom to that. There's no bottom except hell itself is the bottom of that. And that's what we are on our way to. And that's what you saw vomited out on computer screens and TV screens over this past week as you saw just how vile, evil, and wicked an abortion regulation culture becomes. That's how bad it becomes. And there's no bottom to this, folks. If you think this is as bad as it gets, basically cutting up babies and eating them is what we're doing. Selling their parts for all, who knows what? So Madonna can inject them in her face? I don't know. That wouldn't surprise me. How bad it goes, it gets way worse unless we get back to the God-given right to life, which is the only thing that can restrain this type of wickedness is a fear of God. It's the only thing. All right. Now, meanwhile, we've got a new doctor death, 67-year-old Philip Nitschke. He's launching a stage act where he's going to unveil his deliverance machine in which people can go on stage and inhale gas mimicking a suicide. It's a suicide machine. Yeah, he says that he made a move to gas because it's easier to use. People had a hard time with the IV tubes and the needles with the old, you remember, the death machine of, who was our guy here in Michigan, our Dr. Death. Anyway, this guy's a friend of his. I can't remember. He's dead now. Jack Kevorkian. He's in hell as we speak. Dr. Death, and the new Dr. Death, Philip Nitschke, he's got his deliverance machine. He says, suicide's not a crime in the UK, and assistance is not required to use my destiny machine, which is perfectly legal. The gas provides a peaceful death. The new destiny euthanasia machine will provide people with a peaceful and reliable means of death. Oh, chap, yay. Well, oh, yeah, I'm sure. Anyway, does this not sound like some kind of twisted skit from a British comedy troupe? I've got the new destiny machine. It provides a wonderful, peaceful, and reliable means of death. But then what, doctor? What about after death? Now, this doctor and all the other atheists, you know, they'll tell you that there's nothing after death. I don't think about it. You're superstitious to think about God and judgment, the devil and hell and heaven. It's all just a fantasy made up by ignorant goat herders 5,000 years ago. They could barely write. And you're a fool for believing it, and don't bring it up, because if you do, we'll make fun of you and make you feel like you're some kind of ignorant Neanderthal. But folks, that's all a ruse. It's not true. When you mention the name of God and his law and his principles, even if they say they're mocking you on the outside, you are getting to them deep on the inside on a spiritual level. Don't give it up. Don't leave the one weapon that can win the battle. Don't leave it on the battlefield. Pick it up. It's the word of God. It never returns void. And even if they laugh and mock at you and make fun of you on the surface, you are either providing turmoil deep down in their spirit, or you're planting a seed that may one day blossom into repentance and even salvation. So don't be afraid to do it. And these people in the pro-life industry, the pro-family industry, all these people, they've decided to eliminate God from the equation, and that's why they lost the culture war, and that's why they will continue to lose. And people like Dr. Nitschke with his fabulous new deliverance machine will continue to be on the increase, is because our leadership is incompetent and should frankly be run out of town on a rail. Meanwhile, in Spain, a small town has approved a declaration which seeks to dignify the lives of dogs and cats. Even though dogs and cats don't understand the concept of dignity, they're going to dignify them by naming them non-human neighbors. They say they want to protect the animals from cruelty and abuse, which I'm all for, as well as acknowledging their importance in the town. Well, I'm sure they are. Dogs, right? Provide security. Cats eat mice. But do we have to elevate them now to virtual personhood? While in Spain they butcher children? They'd say they're not people. But cats and dogs, they're basically, they're almost calling them, they're giving them the rights of people. Yes, one animal rights campaigner compared this to the day that children's rights were enshrined for the first time. He said, quote, "We're not saying you have to love cats and dogs, but you have to respect them. And if you respect them, then you'll respect humans as well." I can't even follow that. Why? I don't even know why I included that nonsensical story in the show. It was so I could get to this, ladies and gentlemen, in the politics file. Donald Trump was on Anderson Cooper's show, and he made Anderson almost wet himself. Trump said, Anderson whips out a poll that says Trump's not winning. And poll says, Trump says, "What are you talking about, Anderson? I'm leading across the board, and then you hit me with this poll I never seen before where, oh, gee, it's not even that kind of a poll. All I know, Anderson, is I have a very large group of support. And I think you are one of the reasons. Yes, let me tell you, the people don't trust you. And the people don't trust the media. And I understand why." He then went on to lecture Anderson until Anderson was all pale in the face and, I believe, damp in the crotch, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, Trump said the American dream is dead, but he's going to revive it. Yeah, he's going to make it bigger, better, and stronger than ever. So he's Donald Trump, America's new secular savior. Is he the next Ronald Reagan? Maybe. Maybe that's what we have sunk to. And, well, I don't know if Donald Trump's going to be the next president. But one thing I do know, America, is you're going to get just what you deserve in this next presidential election. You're going to get just what you deserve. And we'll be here to watch and to warn and to remind people that God is real. He's watching. And every idle word, whether you spoke it to yourself, whether you spoke it on Anderson Cooper's show, whether you spoke it silently in the voting booth as you pulled the lever for another liberal Republican, God will judge every idle word. And until then, we'll keep track of them as best we can as well. Yes. So I want to thank my friends at KGOV, at AmericanRightToLife.com, at TheologyOnline.com, and of course, I want to thank my other brother there who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview Studios, should the Lord tarry, we'll be back next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.